The first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs. It's a rough week edition of Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on Crack Sidewalks. I'm Joe McCann and Phil Bush. Phil, we knew it was going to be rough, and, well, it kind of was against Xavier and Villanova this week.
Apparently my optimism has failed me once again this week, and the 1-1 hoping for 2-0 was completely bonkers unrealistic.
The lesson here is be pessimistic about everything, and you'll never be disappointed. That's the way I just approach life in general. But I am optimistic that we'll have a good podcast today, Phil. We're going to talk about the last two games, what went right, what went wrong, and we're going to look ahead. And we're going to try to anyone who may be standing on the ledge upset about the team's record, hopefully that's not too many of you. But if people do have concerns about the Marquette making the tournament, we hope you can talk you back from that and tell you why we are still optimistic about the team going forward. But as we record this podcast Sunday night, Phil, let's talk about the game on Sunday against Villanova. Overall, I mean, I don't think Marquette played poorly, but you have to play great to beat the best team in the country, and Marquette didn't. What did you make of the close yet still a loss to the Villanova Wildcats?
I think one of the things I take away is a continuing frustration that seems to be, why can't we get everyone playing well at the same time? Why must one of the Trace amigos always not play well? And by that I mean Howard was decent in the first half. He was good enough in the first half. In the second half, he missed every single shot he took, was saddled with fouls throughout the game, and just struggled to help this team win. Now there's some
and missed a critical free throw.
Absolutely, the front end of a 1-1 with just it's short.
Yeah, he missed. Maybe he was gassed, but still, man. I mean, the guy hasn't missed a free throw until March of last season. He missed three this week. Just a frustrating week for Marcus. But yeah, go on.
Yeah, but yeah, no, it's exactly right, and it's like you need your best players to come through when you need them most, and and obviously the argument would always be that Rousey, Howard, and Hauser are the three best players Marquette has. So Rousey was probably the only one that played up to his maximum level. Hauser wasn't the greatest, but
Hauser
you know,
didn't get a lot of touches.
No, he didn't.
As I remember it, you know, I remember thinking at some points in the game when the team was maybe struggling a little bit, thinking, well, maybe they can get Hauser involved. But I have to say Villanova probably did a pretty good job on Hauser and didn't let him get many easy touches. But, yeah, he didn't get many chances to get going on Sunday. And, you know, one thing, this isn't the answer, but it is maybe one answer as to why Marquette can't get all three guys going at once. Seems like at least one, if not all, are in foul trouble, especially Rousey and Howard. Sam Hauser's pretty good about not fouling. But this was another day that Rousey and Howard both ended up with four fouls. Rousey had three in the first half, if I'm remembering that correctly.
Yes, he did. And, yeah, he got his third with like a minute 15.
Yeah, because they both got two in this first half. And so, you know, Wojo wasn't going to go with Elliott at the point to close out the half because then you might have been down quite a bit if you had to go extended minutes without Rousey or Howard. So you got to play somebody. And then in that time frame, Rousey got his third. So I think that is one reason why they can't get both of them going is more often than not, one of them is in foul trouble. Some of it is their own doing. Some of it may be a questionable call here and there. And, you know, when you only have five fouls to play with, one tough call can really ruin a lot of things, right? Because you've only got five. And so that's 20% of your allotment if there's one bad call on your guy. But the fouls, like, again, I'm not saying it's necessarily all on the officials or any kind of conspiracy or anything like that, but whether it's dumb luck or whatever it is, the foul situation has been frustrating, and I think Wojo was visibly frustrated by it today, both when you see his on-the-court demeanor and hearing him in postgame a little bit.
Yeah, well, it was interesting. I managed to get to the car. It seems to usually work out that I can get to my car after the home games just in time to hear Wojo come on with Steve the Homer Truan and Jim McElvain for the postgame show, and managed to do that today, and it – His speaking tone was pretty much normal, but it conveyed he seemingly underneath was much more fiery, and he had I remember it pretty well. He had a statement to the effect of, "Well, you know, Howard seems to be saddled with fouls all the time, and I don't understand why he doesn't get calls on the other end." You know, I got to do a better job of coaching him up clearly so that he can get some of the calls on the offensive end, because he was taking it to the hoop and aggressive and didn't see what would, I guess, to Wojo seem to be equitable calls on both ends, where Howard was picking up fouls with driving players, but when Howard drove, they weren't seeing, you know, Howard seems to be on his butt every time after a drive and never seemingly getting a call.
Sometimes it's tough for those little guys to get those calls around the basket, isn't it? Unless, you know, Brunson, I guess, got a few, but I, you know, sometimes those little guys, when they get knocked around, maybe they don't get the same calls as larger guys when they drive to the basket for whatever reason. But yeah, I hate complaining about officiating. It makes you sound like such a sore loser sometimes, but I think Marquette has had some dumb luck this year, and like, again, there have been some games when both of your star guards are in foul trouble in the first half. That throws you off a lot. They have to play a little more cautiously on defense, which makes them even more of a liability defensively than they already are. And again, these guys are both shooters, and they can't get in a rhythm. I mean, I think obviously their best games are when they're out there for an extended amount of time, more than 30 minutes, and they can get a lot of shots up or get a lot of looks and really get in the rhythm of the game. I think that's important for shooters. And they haven't been able to do that as often as they would like, I don't think.
No, they haven't, and it does, to your point. It's exactly why we see at least one player out of the three struggle, is because we always have one of them in foul trouble. And I think they're, you know, Wojo is starting to get to the point where he even said in the post game, I don't know what else to do because we're just not getting calls. And it is, you know, it is tough because I think I saw a stat. I'm going off the top of my head, but someone tweeted out that in the Big East, Marcus Howard has gotten the fewest free throws of any player that's over a certain number of minutes played, which is, when you think about it, he's a 3-point shooter, but he's, you know, he takes it to the hoop. I mean, that's how he got half his points against Providence when he scored 52 points. And to have the lowest number of free throws of any, you know, major guard in the Big East seems kind of suspect, right?
Yeah, my one counterpoint to that is when he does drive to the basket, I encourage him to do this, but he does use that little floater a lot,
right,
which works well for them, but you're not going to get fouls called when you're doing that. I mean, if you want fouls called, you've got to go strong to the rack and lay it in, and that's just not to his advantage, because more often than not, when you're a little guy, you're going to get that shot blocked. So that is maybe the one excuse I would have there, but it still is a takeaway from that stat you just said there, Phil. It seems like it disappointing, I guess, it would be the word I'm looking for, that he does get the fewest amount of fouls called, whatever the stat was, fouls called per X number of minutes, whatever it is.
Yeah, it was basically the number of free throws given for a player over 15 minutes a game or something like that in the Big East. So it was basically, I guess I would qualify it as a major player in the Big East. Someone,
yeah, like maybe a guy that KenPom would say is significant contributor, maybe a guy with like 15% of possessions used or something more than,
yeah,
like
exactly
that.
Exactly, okay. Yes, getting the fewest. And I agree with you from, you know, and I know I've been accused of it in the past, but I don't blame the refs per se. There's two calls I think we need to talk about, because Marquette Twitter is a little aghast about two particular calls,
right,
in the Villanova game. But I don't blame them per se. It's just, again, kind of like the free throw defense. It just feels like that it, whether you want to call it bad luck or just not getting a break from the officials on a given night, it feels like a lot more have gone against us than have gone.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those statistical trends that you can't fix, right? Like, it's not like if you're a bad free throw shooting team, well, you could go to practice and like work on your free throws more. If you're a bad defensive team, you can come up with a better defensive strategy. But as far as something like free throw defense or number of fouls called on you or questionable calls against you, there's really nothing you can do about that. And that is frustrating. And I'm with you there. It's like, I don't want to blame officials for losses. Damn it, I wish they'd do their jobs just a little bit better. Just a little bit better. Because it does, again, we're looking at it through our Marquette-colored glasses, and yeah, I'm sure there's some bad calls that go the other way, and there are. But man, there have just been some things that are maddening. And the two calls, which I'm assuming you're talking about, Phil, number one, when it's probably, I guess, Marquette's next to last possession, when Elliott drove to the basket and made a pass and dumped it off to Sakar, and he went up and the ball just came out of his hands. And it looked to me, I was watching it at a bar, so maybe I didn't get a good look at it and I couldn't rewind either. But it looked like he got hit on the arm going up to me. I don't think they got, whoever the defender was for Villanova, got all ball on that. And that was one I thought they missed. And I'm guessing the other one you were referring to was on the offensive rebound on the other end. It looked like DiVincenzo went over the back.
Yeah, those are exactly the two non-fouls, yeah. I think that both of those. I think the Sakar one is a must call. Again, it wouldn't have won the game, but, I mean, if he got, especially Sakar is not one of our better free throw shooters. But you've got to, I mean, the defender was out of position. You can't reward the defender you can't say he knocked the ball out of his hands and that Sakar was the last to touch it and that there was no foul when the defender's out of position. It just doesn't make any logical sense. So that's a foul I have an issue with. Again, I'm not saying it changed the game or guaranteed us a loss.
It was a big play, though. I mean, he goes up and gets that. They're down one, right?
Right, yeah. They're down one with more than 30 seconds left, and the way this team shoots three, and they actually got some, miracle of all miracles. They got a couple of stops down the stretch when they needed them because they were down as much as eight in the last 2 minutes and were within striking distance in the last position. So that's a big no call, right? To not call that is questionable. Now, on the other hand, the Kane offensive or defensive rebound attempt, I can see why people think it's a foul. I would say, if there were 35 minutes left in the game instead of 35 seconds, maybe you get that call, which I know it doesn't seem fair, but that's reality. But that's why you got to box out. That, I think, was honestly just a freshman mistake on Kane. You got to go find the man first, then find the ball. And he was somewhat out of position and just wasn't big enough to hold off. Who was it, Bridges, that got the offensive rebound?
It was him or DiVincenzo. Now, see, like, my mind's blanking. But, yes, I mean, we all know the player you're talking about.
Yeah. But yeah, whoever it was, yeah, maybe you're right. It was DiVincenzo that dished it off to Bridges. But whoever from Villanova came and got the ball, like, again, could it have been called? Yes. But in that kind of situation, you're not going to see that call made. And Kane didn't make enough of a play to force the officials to call it.
Yeah, and the thing is, Marquette had gone to a smaller lineup at that point because – Villanova had been abusing Marquette most of the day because Marquette's big men, particularly Helt, was caught on switches guarding Brunson, and he would just go to the basket whenever he wanted. But so they went to a smaller lineup where it was Hauser who was caught on that switch, and while that's not a great matchup for Sam, he can handle it better than Froehling or John or Helt could. And so, but because you got that smaller lineup in there, you're not going to get that rebound. It would be like, it would have been great. Like, if Froehling was in there, you'd think he gets that rebound probably.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
But at the same time, Froehling might have gotten caught in that switch, and Brunson might have just blown right by him and gotten a layup, too. So it's like, kind of pick your poison. It's, do you want to hope by some miracle your big man could guard Jalen Brunson as he's going to go to the rack? Because that's definitely what he's going to do. Or do you want to try to keep him away from the basket and hope you can get a critical defensive rebound with a smaller lineup? He chose option B, and he didn't get it. Option B might have been the best call, considering the way the defense had gone that day. But that was another thing that kind of stuck out to me, is just like, man, it was like, how often? It may have only been like three times in the whole game, but to me it seemed like 20, that it seemed like it was Helt guarding Brunson one-on-one. I'm like, oh my gosh, not again. Like, stop doing this poor kid. Stop putting him out there guarding one of the best players in the country.
Yeah, it was – I didn't – and defensively, I didn't understand that, right? Like, they've basically been switching everything, and they've been switching the ones through the fives, right? Like, you know, they even switched there at one point early in the first half. Hauser and Froehling switched defensively, and Hauser got back down and gave up a bucket. So I don't know why we're switching that much. I get that Brunson's a threat from three. But fight through that screen, like have Matt hedge a little bit, but don't switch it. Cause you're right, Matt, there, like, no offense to Matt and his brand new haircut, by the way. But you're not going to get him able to take the best player in the, or second best player in the NCAA. No offense to Trae Young. You're not going to have Matt defend that guy.
You really don't want anybody on your team guarding Jalen Brunson, but unfortunately, right, somebody has to. And, right, you know, I got to give it to Jalen Brunson. That dude is unbelievable, and I can't wait to see him get out of Villanova and go pro, because I'm sick of playing against that dude. He is so – and you mentioned Trae Young, and I know we've pretty much given Trae Young the National Player of the Year before Christmas, but when all is said and done, I hope all the voters who decide on Naismith and Wooden Awards and all – you know, we'll give Brunson a very strong look before they go ahead and check the box for Trae Young, because Brunson's numbers at the end of this year are going to be absolutely ridiculous. Now, Young's are probably going to be as well, but Jalen Brunson is just amazing to me, how tough that dude is to defend. And I will say, I thought Sakar did, you know, they kind of went to Sakar more on him late in the game. Sakar had a great game.
He did.
Unfortunate play towards the end really wasn't his fault, when the ball got slapped out of his hand, but Sakar played well on both ends. He probably had 14 points was his final total. Yeah, yeah. 14 points, and I thought he played as good a defense as one can expect when he got matched up on Brunson. But yeah, I just got to say, hats off to Jalen Brunson. That dude is just great. I just don't know what else you can do except salute to you, sir.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the thing, is it's basically like, you know, defensively you go, all right, Jalen Brunson's going to get his points. Let's try and, you know, not bleed to death from Brunson and hope we can stop everyone else. And I will say, and I tweeted about this in the first half, and, you know, Wojo gets, I think, he's learning, he's getting better, right? I think early in his career at Marquette, the in-game adjustments and some of the defensive strategies was questionable at best. But I got to say, though, the job he did against Villanova, there were a couple of times where Villanova built out fairly substantial leads, 8, 9, 10 points, and Wojo made a substitution or changed strategy and got the team re-energized and back in, got a couple of stops defensively when they needed it. In the first half, he switched to more of a full court press, put Sakar on Brunson and denied him the ball. You know, when Marquette made a basket, denied Brunson the inbound, so that they had to have someone else bringing up the ball and initiating the offense, and it allowed Marquette to get back in the game. So, I mean, Wojo made the adjustments. He put the team in a position to where it was, again, within striking distance of.
Yeah, but it came down to two or three possessions, and just Villanova, whether by execution or if you want to say by foul calls or whatever, but it came down to like two or three plays, and Villanova got the best of all of them, and that's just
right.
What it came down to.
Well, and that's what a number one team's going to do to you, right?
For sure.
Is they're number one because they make those plays. If you look at that team, that is the most experienced team that Marquette will play all season, and they've played them twice, and they've been at least competitive in both of those games. So if we're saying, you know, I don't believe in moral victories, but if we're saying silver lining here, there we can build on this, right? And the other thing that we haven't mentioned is Froehling. Froehling best game, right?
That's what I was going to ask you. What did you make of Harry Froehling taking Matt Helt's place in the starting lineup?
I think this is this game was a prime example of why Wojo has said Froehlich gives us skill sets we don't have. That his confidence to score in the post and to bring it from the arc into the post and get buckets is, no offense to Matt Helt, but is significantly better than Matt Helt's skill set, right? And I think he was a little more comfortable defensively as well. You know, so I think it's great.
Yeah, and again, you know, Matt Helt does a fine job. By the way, Matt Helt back to the number one offensive rating in the country. So shouts for that. He's by like he has a 0.1 edge. Like he's at 139.8. The guy behind him is 139.7. So hanging on by a thread, Matt, back at the top. But you know,
Thank
again,
God
Matt.
Brunson missed that three at the end of the game, right?
Yeah, it's actually not Brunson that's behind him. It's now you're gonna make me look it up. But yeah, he it, Brunson is like two or three spots behind him. It is, I think, a dude at Tennessee, Kyle Alexander at Tennessee, 138.8. Oh, so no, he's 1.1 ahead of him. So maybe, yeah, maybe a little bit more of a buffer for Matt. So he's right there. But yeah, Brunson is number four, 137.3. But yeah, anyway, I got sidetracked there. But my point I was trying to make was Matt does a good job. He plays his role and he does fine. But Harry just offers you just a little bit more. And so yeah, you may try him in the starting lineup, get him a few more minutes, and it worked. Like I said, it worked out for the most part. They hung with the number one team in the country from start to finish. Just didn't get a couple plays, a critical rebound, and a critical call there at the end, and that was kind of the difference in it.
Yeah, and I think getting Froehlich more minutes, again, he's getting more comfortable. He's ready to contribute in more and different ways. I kind of liked his edge on defense too. I think he and Sam were getting a little chippy down there, and I kind of liked it. I kind of you know, you wanted a little more of that. Going back to the Buzz days, the what was it, junkyard dog mentality on defense. So I think I liked what they had to offer. Maybe Rousey's rubbing off on them a little bit. He got into a little bit of a spat with Brunson as well. So, you know, it's a tough loss. That's one. If Marquette somehow pulls out that victory, you know, there's no guarantee. You could always fall apart, but you pretty much have a ticket punched if everything goes the way it's supposed to go the rest of the season. So, it is a missed opportunity, but I don't think it does anything. There's no disaster. Like, we 0-2 this week was not something that was going to devastate this team
Yeah,
from
we
a
and we said that
tournament.
on the pod last week, Phil. We said,
Right.
you know, especially for those of you who may be just warming up to the idea of Marquette being a tournament team and getting excited about them, don't stop being excited if they lose both games this week, which they did, because there is still a path to the tournament. They can. I think you were saying off the air, Phil, before we started, that Marquette actually has, at this moment, the 10th best schedule in the country per KenPom.
Yes.
Which makes sense when you think about it, because not many teams have played Xavier twice, Villanova twice, and Purdue. I mean, those are that's five games against teams in the top 10 right now. I don't know how many teams can say they've done that. So a very challenging schedule so far. And you talk about just the Big East alone. Yeah, they're 4-5 in the Big East, but five of your toughest games are behind you.
Yeah.
At both games at Nova, both games with Nova, both games with Xavier, and the one game with Seton Hall, which you won. So
Well,
the back
and a
half of the
road
big.
game against Butler, right? I mean, you could argue that we've played six out of our seven toughest games already.
We can think about that for a second. I suppose you could say that, yeah. I don't know if going to Butler would be hard tougher than going to Creighton, but you know, maybe with Creighton, they did lose a guy for the season last week, so last week or two, so maybe it is. But yeah, I would definitely say that, you know, Marquette's has, you know, played two of the four toughest games on its schedule this week, with Nova at home, at Xavier, the only two tougher, maybe going at Nova and then Purdue at home. Other than that, I mean, this was a very, very challenging week. And if when you're a team like Marquette, that's, you know, borderline tournament team, you're probably going to lose those games. And they did. And that's, you know, I would say it's fine. You never like losing, but by no means is this a season ender. Bracket Matrix probably isn't totally updated as we're recording this, but Marquette is in the 10-11 range, maybe by the time you guys hear this podcast on Monday and it's updated a little more. Maybe more brackets, maybe out of 90 brackets, maybe something more in the 70s or even in the 60s will have Marquette in. As it's, again, as I'm looking at it at this moment on Sunday night, it's 84 out of 90. So yeah, there might, Marquette may drop, and maybe some more brackets may have Marquette out of the tournament at this moment, but I still stand by my assertion that Marquette is going to win 6 or 7 of its next 9 games. It should be a decent favorite, and I say decent favorite by like more than 3 points in most of those games. This week is critical because you got 2 home games before you got a lot of road games coming up after that in February. But the road to the tournament is still there, and I think if you can get to 10 wins in Big East play, I'd still feel pretty good about it.
Oh, absolutely. I as the numbers break, I think 10-6 in the Big East is a lock for a tournament. Or yeah, excuse me, 10-8. 10-8 is a lock for a tournament bid. I mean, it'll probably be something like an 11 or a 12 seed, but you know, so be it, right? It's still a tournament bid. And with this team, you know, we're not going to play Xavier and Villanova every game in the tournament, right? So you give yourselves a fighting chance. I am still very confident that this team makes the tournament. Let's put it that way. And that's more than me just being optimistic, is the way the schedule breaks down. I mean, you talked about Butler and Providence this week. Butler is on Wednesday is going to be playing their third road game in a row, coming into Milwaukee. So, you know, they're going to be a little potentially war weary after that kind of stretch. So maybe you catch them at the right time. Clearly this team seems to perform a little better at home than on the road, which is fine. If we can get the same kind of crowd at the Butler game that we had against Villanova today, which, by the way, we should mention, was an awesome crowd. It was probably the best crowd that have been at a Marquette game in at least a year. Since maybe the last time.
What happened a year ago, by the way?
Yeah. Weird how that worked. But, you know, so if we can get something close to that, resembling that, against Butler, a crowd that's it doesn't have to be a full place, but just a crowd that's energized and excited, I think we can beat Butler. And against Providence, you know, beat them once, they're going to be at full strength this time. But again, playing Providence at home, you would think we'd have a good crowd and be able to influence and win that game. So, the destiny is in our control, basically.
Yeah, hopefully you can hold Keelan Martin under 37 points this time.
We should probably come up with a different strategy.
Yeah, that would be ideal. But yeah, I'm with you, Phil. I think we find out a lot about this team this week.
Yes.
You know, like if they go out and play flat this week and lose 2 games, then yeah, I'm going the other way on this team and saying prepare for the NIT that they don't have their focus anymore. But if they go out and win 2 games this week, then I'd say yeah, they're right on track, right where we would think they would be at this point of the season as we begin February, above 500 in the Big East and on track to get roughly 10 wins.
Right.
So this is kind of a prove it week. Prove that you're over the Villanova loss. You know, you've taken some lumps this week, losing to some very good teams, but that you're still a very strong Big East contender. And I think a lot of bracketologists have 7 teams in the Big East. So basically everyone except the ones at the bottom that are really struggling, Georgetown, DePaul, and then St. John's, who has just really taken a turn for the worse this year. Everyone else, most people have them in.
Yep. Well, and it, really this is the way it breaks down. The next 3 games are absolutely the make and break, right? So Butler and Providence at home and then Seton Hall on the road. If you win all 3 of those games, I mean, it would have to be a major league meltdown to not make the tournament, right?
Oh, yeah.
You win 2 out of those 3, pretty similar. I mean, given, again, like you said, with the 3 teams in the bottom, one of which who has not won a Big East team that you play twice, I mean, those should be 4 give-me games, right? So two wins out of the next 3 sets you up to finish at minimum 10-8. One out of the next 3, you got some work to do. You're going to have to beat Creighton, but again, you're still in decent position. The disaster would be going 0-3. If you go 0-3, that almost forces you to win your last 6 games.
Yeah, you got to win out. Yeah.
It's just bonkers.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, even if, say, Marquette stumbles and gets knocked off by Butler on Wednesday, or Providence decides to ruin National Marquette Day and beat Marquette on Saturday, then, yeah, you could make up for it by going to Seton Hall and beating them, because obviously Marquette played its best game of the season against Seton Hall. Maybe they could just caught Seton Hall sleeping that day back in January, but early January, but, you know, if they could have a similar performance, because after that Seton Hall win, everybody was just buzzing that, oh, this team has turned a corner, we're there, we could finish top three or four in the Big East with a performance like that. Now, I think we've kind of come back down to earth since then, lost 3 out of 4 since, but some tough games at Butler, and then you lose to Xavier and Nova. But, yeah, I'd say that's a good point. I'm just kind of looking at the next two games, but you bring up a good point with the next one. Seton Hall is a golden opportunity as well to get a signature win. That'd be the one thing I'd say is my biggest disappointment from this week, Phil, is almost certainly, no matter what happens, Marquette is not going to have a wow win on its resume, right? Because it would have been great to beat Xavier or Nova and have a win over one of those two on your resume when you're talking about the tournament. Because right now Marquette's best win, I guess it is Seton Hall at home.
Yeah, I think so. Yep.
Yeah. So, you know,
or Providence on the road.
Providence on the road's fine, but I guess I'd still say Seton Hall just because that was just a dominant win and it gets a team that's almost top 30 in KenPom.
Yep.
So yeah. So there's not like a great win, like a holy crap, what a great win that was, but they also don't have really any terrible losses either. I mean, the quote-unquote worst loss is Georgia at home. Other than that, you know, going on the road against Butler and losing to them, there's no real shame in that. And then pretty much everyone else you've lost to is in the top 10. Or, you know, Wichita State's fallen off a little bit, I guess. But you get my point.
Hell, Nova went to Butler and lost.
Yeah, exactly. Hinkle's kind of a tough place to play. So, again, being 4-5 in the Big East at this point, tough, but by no means a reason to be overly pessimistic about this team's chances. Now, the critical thing against Butler, Phil, is we kind of maybe shift gears looking forward to these two games this week a little bit. Obviously, the last time around against Butler, you know, Keelan Martin just did whatever he wanted against Marquette. And so how can Marquette account for him and find a way to turn the tide on Butler, who beat Marquette pretty soundly the last time by 11 points?
Well, I think it really just comes down to they've got to do something different. I think the book's out on them switching a lot, and I think they need to make a change on that and maybe not switch as often, be willing to run over and under screens. And I also think they should want to throw some 2-3 at Butler. Just kind of mix it up a little bit. I know Wojo wants to go man-to-man all the time, and I think he's got this idea in his head that he's got athletes 1 through 5, so he's good to go. I think they just need to go with some different lineups, and they have got to find a way. And maybe it's Wojo's comments. Some officials get in there and go, oh, yeah, maybe we've been a little harsh or whatever. I don't care what it is. But you've got to find a way to get Rousey and Howard and Hauser playing together for extended periods of time and all three of them playing well.
I don't know what else Wojo can say except the obvious of like, hey man, look, I just call it both ways. What you call down there, call down here, and what you let go down there, let it go down here. You know, if my 5'10 guard gets hacked going to the basket, I want the same call as you're going to give the 6'5 guy going to the basket on the other end. Like, don't have a bias against my guys because they're little when they're driving to the basket. A foul's a foul. Call it when these guys go to the basket. So other than that, again, I'm sure he probably says that every game. It's like, hey, man, I'm not asking for favoritism. I'm asking for equality here. I'm just asking for the same call on both ends. So,
right.
I don't know. And at home, you should get those calls. That was the most frustrating thing about Sunday was, you know, those two tough calls at the end. You got to get one of those at home, man. I know they're number one team, but you're at home. That's part of the thing about being at home, man. The officials are supposed to, on a 50-50 call, man, they're supposed to go to the home side. They want to hear the crowd roar, right? I mean,
right.
That was the big
thing.
Well,
how many times have we said it would be nice to get some home cooking for once? Like I said, I don't blame officials. It just feels very unlucky this season. That's all.
Yeah, and I do. And maybe there is a stat somewhere. I don't think it's on KenPom, but there is a stat somewhere where they measure luck.
KenPom does have it. Yeah.
I'm not going to do it on the fly right now, but right, I would love to see what Marquette's luck number is, because I guarantee it's bad.
Yeah, I do remember looking it up, and it was something like 228th in the country or something like that. And you know, all the bye game teams are probably 229 and above. So they've got to be of the contenders. It's got to be one of the worst lucks.
Yeah, so maybe that's something we'll have for you in the next podcast. We'll talk about luck in the next podcast, but you know, back to talking about Butler this week, Phil. For the most part, though, I think if you can kind of get a similar effort against Butler as you got against Villanova on Sunday, I think you probably come out with that win. Just because as good as Butler is and as talented as they are, they're not as good as Villanova is. I know they beat Villanova earlier this year, but you get my point. Top to bottom, yep. Villanova's a better team, and they just made championship plays at the end on Sunday. And you just got to hope Keelan Martin just doesn't go bananas on you again and got to figure out something there. Maybe if Sakar can have another strong defensive effort, this time put him on Martin, and maybe you can kind of bring him back down to earth that way. And again, like you said, the hope is sooner or later we're going to have all three of the Trey's Amigos clicking on all cylinders in one game, and Wednesday would be a heck of a time for that.
Well, and I think if I remember correctly, you mentioned Sakar. I think Sakar was in foul trouble at Butler, if I remember correctly. So maybe that was the answer all along, was that Sakar was going to focus on Keelan Martin. And then when Sakar got in foul trouble, they had to go with the poo-poo platter of, Kane and Elliott and whoever was left available that was not nearly tall enough and or thick enough to kind of stop Martin. Cause Elliott kind of got abused.
Yeah. I guess I'm looking at the box score. Sakar only had one foul in that game.
Oh, so I'm misremembering that.
Maybe it wasn't, but he had 7 points, played 17 minutes though. So he didn't play a bunch.
Should change that.
Yeah. So yeah, maybe more minutes for Sakar, in that game, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know, but something's got to change defensively, because guys scoring almost 40 points on you, got to have some kind of adjustment. And, Butler shot the ball well in that game, which is teams are apt to do in their home gym, so hopefully that number flips coming to Milwaukee this time around.
But again, I think something's got to change, because, Butler's not a bad three-point shooting team, but they're not a great three-point shooting team. So I think at the end of the day, what Marquette has to do is figure out what their strategy is to do not let Keelan Martin beat you, and then adjust the strategy to be a little more giving on the three-point side. And I'm not saying go to a pack line or anything like that, but I think they got to be stingier in the paint defensively for this game against Butler to be successful. And quite frankly, I think that's true of Providence as well.
Yeah, in the rematch against Providence on Saturday, obviously another critical game, and I'm assuming Providence is going to have Rodney Bullock this time around. That was obviously a factor in the first game. Let's not lie to ourselves. And I don't know if we can count on Marcus Howard going off for 52 again, but it would be nice if he did.
I wouldn't complain if it were to happen.
Yeah, I would certainly love that. But it's again, you just hope the home court advantage is enough to keep the game in your favor, because Bullock being out and Howard going bananas really swung that game for Marquette the first time around. But at the same time, see, Marquette found some holes in that defense that allowed Howard to go off in that game. So hopefully there's some kind of a similar mismatch that would allow either Howard or Rousey, ideally both, to go off against Providence, and then hopefully you can get that win against Providence on National Marquette Day.
Yeah, I agree. When I look at it in balance, I think, Butler or Providence, it's probably 60-40 both games. Not that Ken Pom looks at it that way, but I think, 60-40 odds that both of those games in Marquette's favor in terms of likelihood to win. So I think when I'm looking at, and they're not dissimilar, right? Like if you're prepping for Butler, the prep for Providence isn't that much different, right? Martin and Bullock are probably comparable players. They've got one or two snipers for both teams. And then the rest are average to above average players that you have to account for. So it kind of lines up nice that you kind of run maybe some of the same things for both of those games. and see what you get. I'm optimistic for at least a 1-1 this week with those two games, since they are both at home. Plus, you know, going 0-2 this week, especially after going 0-2, having four losses in a row, man, that could be – it's not the end of the world. Obviously, we talked about how all they have to do is go 1-3 over the next three games. But that's putting an awful lot of pressure on yourself to lose four in a row and come back and win five out of the next six.
Yeah, I mean, I'm honestly, this is a rarity. I'm actually a little more optimistic than you, Phil, this week. I think Marquette can go 2-0 this week.
I think they can, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm kind of feeling a turnaround. You know, again, I know we're disappointed right now coming off a couple tough losses. One that was just, we haven't really talked about it much, probably for good reason, but just a disaster at Xavier. I mean, that game was rough. But, and then, you know, just kind of getting your heart ripped out against, you're feeling upset over number one Villanova on Sunday. But I do think this team is still improving, and again, you've turned the page, you're looking at the back half of the Big East schedule against teams that you can and in some cases should beat. And yeah, I think Marquette will get two wins this week. I think they'll beat Butler on Wednesday, and then they'll hopefully get it done on Saturday against Providence as well.
Well, let's put it this way. I have more confidence in the Providence game than I do the Butler game, but I do think that it's likely that – or not likely. I do think it's possible that they could win both games. I'm glad to hear you're more optimistic than I. That gives me reason to be extra optimistic because I think you're wrong a lot less than I are – a lot less than I am. So,
yeah, I don't know about that. But,
yeah, but we'll see how it works out. Again – this is all, you know, I would hope that Wojo's telling the team, hey, look, great effort this week for the second half of the week, the first half of the week. Xavier game.
Yeah, by the way, I don't want to talk about it too much, but Xavier was just terrible, wasn't it? I mean, that was the worst
game of the season, right?
Yeah, I think statistically, like, not just visually, I mean, just statistically, it was. It was, like, I think Marquette's worst offensive performance, one of their worst defensive performances. So hopefully that game is just out of their system and they just never play. It seemed like
burn the tape games, right?
Yeah, like, just
there's
burn
no
it.
Need to watch it.
Just just a stinker of a game. Hopefully get that out of your system. And yeah, really don't want to talk about it too much because that was
I will say there was some talk out of Wojo that I was kind of disappointed with, talking something about like having 9 games off or 9 days off is tough for that game. And it's kind of like, really, is it that tough? Like, I get, you know, that you want to have the players playing and stuff like that to keep them consistent. But 9 days off is not, you know, a 25-point loss and never really in the game kind of difficult.
Yeah, I mean, would you rather have 1 day off before facing Xavier?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, it's not like you were locked in a cage for 9 days. I mean, you had time to practice and players who were injured could do their rehab and, you know, Marcus Howard, who was under the weather, take fluids and get healthy. And yeah, I mean, maybe you were in a bit, it's not like they were sleeping the whole time. I mean, it's just kind of regular routine. They just didn't play games. So yeah, I was a little bummed to see that he kind of in uncertain fashion kind of blamed having 9 days off for their performance. But again, Xavier's a great team, so you kind of expect to go on the road and lose that game. But the fact that they just looked totally unprepared for that game and just got blown out of the water was disappointing.
Yeah, it was disappointing, but I will tell you this. The bounce back performance against Villanova is in that context, right? Again, there are no moral victories, but the fact that they had that just turd of a Xavier game and then bounced back and were very competitive against the number one team in the country. Okay, so they've got some mental fortitude and they've got some ability to kind of recover here. So that is cause for hope in the coming games, because mentally this team is tough enough to win those hard games, right?
Yeah, hopefully hopefully that Xavier game was just rock bottom and it's just all up from there. Just keep getting a little better. You know, they played better but lost against Villanova. Hopefully you play a little better and then you beat Butler and then you beat Providence. Then everything will be fine. And then we could talk about how Marquette's right on track to make the tournament about this time next week.
That would be a tremendous podcast. I look forward to that.
By the way, shout out to the whoever is in charge of Marquette promotions. You know, for National Marquette Day, not only are they going to stripe out the Bradley Center, they're giving away T-shirts this time. They got a sponsor on board. Who is it? Pepsi, I think it is?
Yeah,
it's giving away the T-shirts. Yeah, so like they've tried the stripe out or, you know, a gold out or try to get any kind of things where you're trying to get the fans wearing certain color t-shirts, either everybody wearing the same color or having certain sections wear certain colors. Just sending out emails and texts and tweets and trying to get everybody to do it, it never works. It'll never be perfect. Having the shirts in the seat for them when they arrive, that's when it works. And so whoever got that done and got the sponsorship on board and got the shirts for the fans, kudos to that person or those people. They got it done. So the Bradley Center is going to look awesome on television, I think, because they're going to have the sections, you know, dark blue, championship blue, gold, and just alternating all around the arena. I think it's going to look great. So I am excited. I don't know what section you are, Phil. What color t-shirt are you getting? Do you know?
I don't know. I haven't looked. I'm section 422.
422. Okay, I'll look at it here while you're talking.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting. I'm curious to see.
You are championship blue.
Oh, sweet. Perfect. I will say, though, that I'm going to be curious to see if they're putting the t-shirts on the chairs or if they're going to have some sort of distribution system because, you know, sizing is having just in my section alone, there are quite a variation in sizes of individuals.
Yeah. I don't know of a good way to do that other than to give everybody an extra large shirt and hope they enjoy it.
It's like, which is fine if you're 6'4" and a little on the less than thin side, extra large will do just fine, especially after you shrink it.
Yes, I mean, so you know, the larger folks they get a shirt that fits comfortably, and the smaller folks and the kids they get something to sleep in. So there's
they get a blanket. Good for you.
Yes, so good for them. So, yeah. So I mean, again, whoever organized that at Marquette, kudos to organize this so the fans get shirts, and it's going to be coordinated like that. I look forward to seeing what it's going to look like on television. And speaking of watching it on television, as I'm sure you are all aware, National Marquette Day is a day when alumni groups around the country organize watch parties to watch the Marquette game, and I know many of them collect money for scholarships or, you know, raise a little money for the school, have giveaways, things like that. It's a great opportunity if you don't live in Milwaukee or, you know, around that area to meet some Marquette alums in your city. You know, like, take me in Dallas. As you would imagine, there are not a ton of Marquette alumni in Dallas, but there are a few, and I do enjoy going to our little alumni watch parties and meeting, you know, even if it's only like 10 or 12 people, just to meet a few new people who went to the same school, and it's kind of fun. So wherever you are, Washington, D.C., Seattle, Chicago, Miami, I think, has one. You know, look and see if there is a watch party in your city and go. Yeah, again, even if you're in a place as far away as Dallas, you may be surprised. It's like, oh, I'm expecting like 5 people, and oh, look, there's 25 people. And yeah, again, it's a small crowd if you're far away like I am, but still, you get to meet some fellow Marquette fans, so it is fun. Again, they send out an email blast, and there's probably stuff on their website if you want to look up where the watch party is. If you live near a major city, like, you know, one of the top 20 markets in the country, something like that, there's probably a watch party where you are. Look it up, find it, go. It'll be a lot of fun. You'll meet some Marquette alumni in your city. It's a good time. So it's our day. It's a fun time because, you know, we don't have a homecoming game like schools with football teams do. So we have National Marquette Day. So it's a lot of fun. So if you live in Milwaukee, go enjoy the game or go to they have a pep rally on Saturday, Phil.
Yeah, they got a pep rally on, it's either Friday or Saturday. And then they have a, each of the, like there's a college of engineering pregame and stuff that you can get together and stuff before those games. So yeah. And hey, if you're looking for something to talk about Scrambled Eggs Podcast. I'm sure that's a winner at parties.
Yeah. Go to your watch party and say, hey, I heard about this on Scrambled Eggs. And they'll all be like, what?
what does your breakfast have to do with this?
I don't understand.
What's going on?
Yeah. But we do appreciate you guys listening to Scrambled Eggs, as always. Thank you for joining us on here. That's just going to about do it for this edition. Again, thank you as always. We appreciate it. We welcome your feedback on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF 23. Cracked Sidewalks is the team handle. Go to cracksidewalks.com. You can leave comments under the podcast where we post them there. Go on iTunes, rate and review, subscribe. We appreciate that very much. You can also like the Scrambled Eggs Facebook page as well. We post the podcast on there. Phil, final thoughts, final predictions for this week. One win, two wins, no wins.
I've been burned. I'm going to say 1 out of 2 this week.
Oh, wow. They've killed your optimism. That makes me so sad. I'm saying two.
Good. I like it.
I'm going to double up. It. Two wins. Until then, seashells and balloons, everybody. Have a good week.